It's March Madness time. I don't have any clue what I'm talking about, so I need some help. We're bringing on the Ringer's Jonathan Charks. I'm Brian Gibberman. It's another edition of the Podium Game Podcast. John, what's going on?
Nothing too much, man. How you doing?
I'm good. All right, so just real quick, you just got the new gig. What type of stuff should we be expecting from you there?
I think it'll be pretty similar to what I've been doing before. You know, NBA, NCAA, the draft. The site doesn't go live, I think, until late May or early June. So for now, we'll be doing newsletters 3 times a week. And then I'll be doing a few supplemental newsletters for March Madness over the next few weeks, if anyone's interested in that kind of thing.
All right. And where can the do you know where they can go to sign up for the newsletter?
TheRinger.com.
All right, cool. Front center. All right, I signed up. I got the first one, read his first piece. I forgot what it was about, all right? What'd you write about in the first one?
Blow to my heart. No, it's about how coaches are really like GMs, and it's as much about team building as like X and O's for the tournaments.
Okay, I did read it. I got the thing. I too busy remembering Simmons write about the movie The Ringer, which I love dearly, and he was insulting it the entire time, so I was very upset.
I never saw that one. I guess I'll have to catch that at some point.
Oh, it's really not good, but I have a terrible sense of humor and laugh the entire time. All right, yeah, before I make a fool of myself anymore, let's start with, we're going to get into March Madness, because I know that's what people want to hear, but I want to talk about Ben Simmons and Brandon Ingram really quick. All right, here, is this a fair comparison? What's going on right now with Ben Simmons reminds me of what happened with Andre Drummond when he was leaving school.
Interesting. That's an interesting comparison. I hadn't thought about that one. Let me think about that. I will say, I don't know, because Drummond was really in a bad situation for his skill set at UConn. He was playing with a second center, and the team kind of fell apart in that sense. But the weird thing with LSU is, like, all the pieces were there, which is really bizarre part about it. They had shooting, they had guards, they had a rim-rolling big man, they had a stretch big man, they had Simmons. Though I guess that was a weird situation, man. I wonder, it's hard to say from the outside how much of that was Johnny Jones and how much of that was Simmons, and that just really kind of fell apart on them. I don't know.
What did you think went wrong with, like, where did you see, from what you could, from watching, obviously, without knowing what was going on behind the scenes, just what basic, when you watched LSU on a regular basis, what did you see that wasn't fitting?
The weird part about it is, like, when I was watching them mostly at non-conference, but then in the conference, like, they pushed OU to the last second, like, the tools were there. I would guess is Blackney not really as much potential, and Hornsby getting hurt. Those are two main guards. And then Brandon, or maybe it's Brandon Sampson. I forget his name was Jamal or not. He never really came through. He was a top 100 recruit. Tim Quarterman didn't take a step forward. I would say A was their guards. B was their defense. And that really is where you got to put out Johnny Jones. Because, like, you got the athletes. You just got to, as a college coach, your first job is to build a good defense. Especially if you have talented players on offense. And I'll have to look at the numbers, but it didn't seem like they played very good defense. Though that was also partly on Ben Simmons. He really, let's just say he was a conscientious objector on Monday nights on the defensive end.
And he has, like, I watched the Oklahoma game too, and that game, like, you saw that he has tools to be a good defender, correct?
I mean, definitely on the perimeter. He's not very long, so he can struggle to protect the rim. But this is a guy who should be at least a good perimeter defender. He should at least be a positional defender on the interior, too. And he really wasn't.
And they used him in, and something that caught my eye in that Oklahoma game, they used him on, they switched a lot, and he got put in positions where he was guarding on the perimeter. I thought he did well with his lateral quickness.
Yeah, I remember, like, I would say the best player he faced this season was Henry Ellenson at Marquette. That was back in non-conference. And Ellenson was probably going to be a lottery pick. And Ellenson was able to, like, get him in the post and shoot over him. But then when he went on the perimeter, Simmons pressed him up at the three-point line and stole the ball from him a few times. Like, this is a big guy who can move his feet really well. I mean, he should have been a better defensive player. I guess that comes on to him and the coach.
So In some places, there's people who are talking about him as a small forward prospect. That doesn't make much sense to me. Does it make sense to you?
No. I mean, maybe 20 years ago or 10 years ago, but the way the league is going now, you always put guys at their lowest position. So if you could be a 3 and you could be a 4, you're a 4. I mean, I don't see him as a 3 at all. I see about the shooting ability.
I would say, to me, more closer to being a small ball 5 than a 3, right?
Yeah. The way the league is going these days, yeah. But, man, you do not want Simmons as your rim protector right now. That would not work. So, probably neither.
So he is a power forward right now. You want someone bigger next to him, and you don't want him as a small forward. All right, that's pretty.
I guess he reminds me kind of Julius Randle in that sense. Like, that's, I always worry, he's a short-armed, non-shooting four. It's just hard to build on those kind of players.
The difference, though, is the elite passing, I think, is a key difference between the two of them, because when you're a good passer, interior passer, you can kind of hide the spacing a little bit better than with someone like Julius Randle.
Well, I mean, he's definitely a better prospect, but I was just saying in terms of team building, they had the same that kind of profile. That's what worries me with Simmons, is a short arm, poor shooting profile.
What's the difference between him and Ingram to you? Do you like Ingram more because he's the guy who can shoot?
To me, it's close enough where it would come down to fit. It would come down to who else is on my roster. And it would also a little bit, I think, come down to, like, the overall philosophy. Like, I was listening to a podcast with Daryl Morey. I think it was on the Zach Lowe one. And he was saying how, like, his owner likes to swing for the fences. To me, like, Simmons is your home run swing, hack away. Build a team around this guy. Maybe he can be an elite player. Ingram, I think, is a safer pick in a lot of ways because of shooting ability.
Ingram is a little Harrison Barnes-ish to me. Is that...
I guess a little unfair. I wouldn't put him in the Harrison Barnes category.
In terms of... What about in terms of the idea is that he can shoot, he has some physical ability, but... It's not molded at all yet.
Well, I would say he has more shake to him than Harrison Barnes. Like, I remember watching Barnes in college, and it felt like he got most of his points off those big men they had and pushing the ball. But when he was in the half court, I wasn't too confident that he'd get a shot one-on-one. Whereas I think Ingram will be able to score pretty easily at any level of basketball.
Maybe I haven't seen him enough. When I've watched him, I feel like I didn't see him do much else besides shoot over people or your basic straight line drive.
I mean, maybe, but he's also way longer than Harrison Barnes too, so he can do that. Like, Barnes doesn't have a 7'3" wingspan to shoot over people like that.
Yeah, no, he does, and you look at it, he does. Ingram is like, the measurables are all gonna be there for him. Like, when he goes to the combine, people are probably going to freak out.
Yeah, I've actually got a Harrison Barnes comp in this draft, but it's not Ingram.
Go ahead.
I'm thinking Jaylen Brown at Cal. They're not quite the same player, but I think it'll be the same dynamic where Brown's going to be, I'd say, an average 3, but possibly a good to great small ball 4.
Brown has a little bit more shake to him already than Barnes does, though, doesn't he? He gets to the foul line a good amount.
Yeah, but he's also not as good a shooter, and I don't really trust him with the ball in his hands a lot. And I feel like at the 3, they're going to play off him a bit. I guess I'd rather have him go up against bigger, slower defenders than faster, smaller ones. I'll put it that way.
And that's not something Cal had him do a lot, right?
No. Cal's it's a really weird team because they have so many good players, but not a lot of shooting. It's just all their players, it's kind of hard to say what their ceiling is because they're not really in a place to – get the most out of their abilities, but they're crazy, crazy talented. Like, I would say Cal's a team to watch if you're an NBA fan of this tournament.
I think I like Brown more than most people, but I also like him in the context that you're hitting on, that he's more of a small ball for, like, he's got a thick, he's built like Barnes. I actually think from a body type perspective, that's about as perfect as you can get.
Yeah, I mean, that guy is 19. He is freaking jacked, dude. I mean, compare him to Ingram. It's incredible. Looks like a bodybuilder, like a bookworm. their body types.
Do you think Rab's a better – would you take – you think Rab goes higher in the draft or Brown?
I think Brown goes higher, but I'm a huge Rab fan. Like, he's probably my biggest sleeper in this year's draft. Like, I'm really in love with that guy as a prospect. I think he will surprise a lot of people at the next level.
Center, right?
Yes, but I think he can play some four, too, in the right situation.
All right, so let's transfer this over to March Madness a little bit. Because I'm very early in my draft watching, prospect watching type thing, and the three guys I've watched are Ingram, Simmons, and Brown that I've really seen. All right, so why in this tournament did they put all of the talent like in the set? I was doing for the website I write for, I just went through, I used CBS and I used Draft Express and I just used their top 100 and I, to, because the Suns have three draft picks. So I just kind of compiled a list so everyone could kind of have an idea where, what to watch and who to see. And it seems like all the talent in this is in the South and the Mid and the East. Is it really that hard to balance out these regions? I don't really get it.
It's hard to say. I did read an interesting conspiracy theory from a Twitter guy. I'll give him a shout out, Boston Red 88. And he was just saying how they put Duke in the easiest bracket possible and stacked everyone else in the harder ones, which honestly is possible how it looks right now. I don't know what they were doing.
The year I remember, there's another team I'm going to add to this, but I remember the year Duke, I think it was the year they beat Butler, and I remember their bracket that year. That was the, when they played Baylor in the Elite Eight. Yeah. That was like the easiest path to a Final Four I'd ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, like, which one definitely is not the hardest bracket there, for sure.
The other team that people are doing that for, that they're saying that, is Michigan State.
We'll see. I like Michigan State a lot, but yeah, it's not as strong a bracket as the other two, for sure.
And that, and their AD is on the, I'm a Michigan fan, so the Michigan conspiracists are talking about this. Their AD's on the committee. I don't think Dayton's, I've seen Dayton a little bit this year, and Archie Miller, I mean, that doesn't seem like it's a walkover second round game.
I haven't watched Dayton a ton, but they're always a solid tournament team. They got a really interesting young big man. I'm surprised at Dayton. He's 6'11", 270, he's really athletic. I don't know how he's in the A-10.
What's your most important aspect of having success in the tournament? Coaching, defense, guard play. What do you think is the – what do you prioritize?
To me, it's having a balanced team. I don't like imbalanced rosters. Like Kentucky, I love their guards in the college level, but their bigs, I just don't trust them. I'd rather have a team that has good guards, good wings, good bigs, than has, like, great guards, and then average wings, average bigs. To me, give me good every position of a greater one.
Who do you think is the most balanced team?
Michigan State.
And what throughout their roster, if you would go through, what makes them so balanced?
Well, you've got, I think, in my opinion, the best player in college basketball, Denzel Valentine, 6'6" point forward. Then you've got two elite shooters, Harris and Forbes, and Harris is a pretty athletic 6'3 wing who can defend multiple positions. Up front, you've got a big senior bruiser, Matt Costello, and you've got a 6'10 high-flying freshman, Deontay Davis. So they can guard every position, and they can score from every position. They can spread the floor. They have an elite one-on-one creator and a secondary playmaker at Harris. Like, to me, they've got all of the pieces you need to win. And I think I'm looking at it like, to beat Michigan State, there's nothing you go into the game like, man, let's take this away from them, let's exploit them here. It's just, they do everything well. We've got to be a better team than them, period. That's going to be hard to do this year.
Would you take Heald or Valentine first?
I would take Valentine, just in turn. I think he's a much more, it's close because Heald's, I would assume, is going to be a better defensive player because of his athletic ability, though obviously in college, he's going to have to do that very often. But I think Valentine is just a way more diversified offensive player.
I'm with you on that. I feel like we're not in the majority with that, though.
Well, I mean, people they love PPG, you know. And Heald has a lot of big shots. It's hard to get it out of people's minds. To me, when you watch Oklahoma, if you watch it enough, you'll see that really the most important player, not their best player, their most important player is Isaiah Cousins. He's the point guard. He guards a tougher matchup on the perimeter. He sets appeals for a lot of his shots. Whereas Hield is kind of a super shooter specialist almost on Oklahoma. He doesn't create for anybody else. He doesn't really guard that much. And he drives off the front of the shot. So, I don't know. I guess I'm saying, like, to me, for Oklahoma, the guy to watch for their tournament success is Isaiah Cousins. Anyways.
Are you, just kind of bouncing back and forth between draft and NCAA tournament stuff. Are you at all worried about Hield's three-point percentage kind of being way higher than it has been previous years, or do you think it's something that's gonna stick?
I would say I'm more worried about the lack of versatility in his game than anything else. I think he'll be a good shooter. It's just, to me, I don't know. I'm a big fan of guys who can do multiple things, and I worry that Hield's thing right now is three-point shooting, and I want to have one more thing. Maybe it could be defense, but we don't see it very much in college. So that, to me, is the question for Hield. How good can he be at defense? Because if he's not great at defense, he's like, and maybe he's Wesley Maxwell, like Wes Maxwell, defensive ability. How great a player is that really? I don't know.
Which, if you were to pick which one seed do you think gets eliminated first?
I'm going to go list real quick. It's kind of hard to go against Villanova after all these years. They lose like every year in the second round, it seems like. Are they one this year? Yeah.
No, I think they're two.
No, they're two.
Yeah, no, there went the easy answer for you.
Yeah. Let's see. 1-1. I'll give you two games I think are pretty good in the second round. I could see North Carolina-USC being a very good game. And then I could see Virginia Butler being a very good game. I guess I'll say push come to shove. I wouldn't be surprised if Butler beats Virginia. That would be my upset for the one seed if I was picking one.
Okay, so but the other one, so you like USC to beat Providence?
Yeah, I mean, to me, I've watched a lot of Providence this year to watch Chris Dunn, and the rest of that team is just not very good. It's hard to have much confidence in the other two players, since Chris Dunn and Bentil. And USC is a pretty balanced team. I like what Andy Enfield's doing at USC. He's basically a pretty good coach.
They kind of fell apart late in the season, though. There was a point where they looked like they could have been like a 4 or 5 seed, and then it kind of came apart.
Yeah, I didn't watch them much this year. I just watched a few of their like Pac-12 tournament games. I thought this is a very talented team, so I really can't say much about their season.
How many of these? I mean, college basketball. This is the thing that's hard for me. There's just so many damn teams. How many in this field do you think you're like confident talking about and discussing?
I mean, I'm confident in most of the higher seeds and like the little majors. I would say these last 2.5 weeks I've been kind of cramming for the tournament. That's kind of how I do it every year. So like, I can talk about the players, but like with USC, what happened in November through February, I really don't know. I have to look at a list. I'm not sure, but I can talk about most of these players.
What? How do you like using the tournament? I think we've talked about this last year when I've had you on, but in case people didn't, from a scouting perspective for the NBA, how do you like to use the NCAA tournament?
To me, what's cool about it is this chance to see guys match up with other elite players. Like, that to me is really tells the tale for a lot of these guys. It's not so much the stage. It's like, you know, there's only like, at your position, maybe like 6 players in the country who are NBA prospects, or 10. And maybe you might see one all season. But if you play the tournament, you make a deep run, you might see 2 back-to-back times. A good example of that is like the guy at Utah, Pirtle. He's a great college center. But what I want to see him do is play against other great college centers. And I think in the Pac-12, the best other center is probably Josh Scott at Colorado, and he's a fringe second-round pick. So that only says so much about Pirtle's game, him being able to beat Josh Scott. But in this bracket, in the second round, he could play DeMontis Sabonis from Gonzaga. That would be a very interesting matchup. If he gets to the third round, he'd play Deontay Davis at Michigan State. And if he gets to the Elite Eight, he could play A.J. Hammonds at Purdue. Like, let me watch Pirtle play Sabonis, Hammonds, Davis for 3 games, and I'll feel pretty confident about what he can do in the NBA.
I said the Midwest bracket was the old school center bracket.
Yeah, it worked out well for that, for sure.
That's when I was going through it. I was like, wait a second, they put all the back-to-the-basket centers in one in one bracket. Why did the Big Ten get? It seemed like they're underseeded. Why did that happen?
I don't know. I will say this: I'm a Big 12 guy, and I feel like the Big 12 has been overseeded again. So I'd probably push other conferences down.
It's like I'm looking like Indiana being a 5 seed and Iowa being a 7. They just seemed a little like that's the one conference I really see. I see the most of the Big Ten, and I thought they weren't. So it wasn't supposed to be a really good conference going into the year, and I thought it ended up being pretty decent.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I like Indiana a lot. I like Purdue a lot. I like Michigan State a lot. I think I haven't seen as much as you have, but I think they're better than the Big 12. I think these Big 12 teams are in for a rough tumble.
Like Iowa State, they were going into the year. They were a top five. Weren't they like number one or two at some point?
They were high up, but yeah, they got some holes in them.
And then and then they ended up being like an 11 loss. 4 seed, like that seems like a lot of losses for a team that's a 4.
It's just the Big 12's national perception is very high right now. You know, a lot of it is with the Big 12. There's only 10 teams in the conference, so there's not a lot of like Rutgers or Minnesota that's gonna drag down the RPI. Everybody, the Big 12, it's at home and home, 9 opponents, and only one bad team in TCU. So everyone's RPI is kind of artificially lifted high. So I think it's because a lot of like decent to good teams, but I don't know how many great teams they have. And I think that's kind of overshadowed with the RPI, all those kind of scheduled measurements.
Arizona get a little bit screwed having Vanderbilt. I mean, it ended up being Wichita State, but it seemed like whichever one came out of that was really a talented team for an 11 seed.
Yeah, Wichita looked really good last night. They looked really good.
Do they have guys left from the Final Four team?
They still got Baker and Van Vliet. This is the main two cogs are still there. They're on the old Perry Ellis 9 years in college plan, I guess.
Perry, is he an older dude also, or is he only like 22, 23?
He's only 22. Really, I hate to say this as a man with this problem myself. I shouldn't even say this. But he's got a receding hairline, so he just looks a lot older than he actually is. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, no, and it's with him, it's like a mixture of things. It's the way he plays. Like, he has, like, an old man's game.
He does.
Because he's not, like, really crazy athletic. I think, doesn't he have, like, a beard, too?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he looks like a 30-year-old dude, and he's been in college forever.
Yeah. I mean, he's also like a 4-year starter, big minutes right away as a freshman, and on a team on TV all the time. So
that Uncle Anthony guy was like my favorite thing of the conference tournaments.
Yeah, that was pretty great.
And the turnaround that he got that made after the dunk and then wore it the next day was amazing.
I think that's his job. Like, he like makes novelty clocks. That's like his thing.
I was watching with that next game. I was watching at a bar without sound on, so I didn't hear any of the commentary. I just kept seeing him on TV, and I was so happy. I was like, "Oh, this is making this all worth it."
Yeah, he'll be on TV a lot, I'm sure, in the Kansas game.
Oh yeah, he got himself. If he does have that, he should put like something on there to get his business going. Are there any games in Texas that you're going to get to see live?
No, but I like watch the game on TV anyways. If you go live to a tournament game, you miss so much in the other game.
That's true. I've never gone to a first or second round. Have you?
No, and from what I've heard, it kind of sucks the atmosphere because they're usually played far away from everybody else, and like it's half full of stadium. It's better. It's a TV event.
I've done the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, and Final Four. The Final Four is a fantastic trip. If anyone is looking for something to do, the tickets aren't expensive, and you can get them you can pretty much get them face value or even under face value if you try hard enough. And then there's all sorts of stuff to do when you go to the different cities.
I remember you came to Dallas, right? You were here for the Kentucky UConn game?
Yes, I was.
Yeah.
I've been to Dallas.
That was a good game.
Yeah, it was. I skipped because I booked it. I got a plane ticket so cheap when Michigan was playing in the Elite Eight, I was just like, you know what? If they make it, I'll go. And if they lose, whatever, it's going to a Final Four. And I ended up not going to the – I missed that Kentucky-Wisconsin game. I ended up just going out in Dallas and watching it on TV. But then we got tickets to – you just we got 100 – they were $125 to go watch a championship.
Well, that's not bad at all.
No, that's like
because there's so many seats in the Final Four stadium too. It's like they play on the football stadiums.
Yeah, like the year before when I went in Atlanta when Michigan did make it, I was like I think it was like $225 total for all three games. It's like that's it's a reasonably priced trip. It's not like going to a Super Bowl or something like that. The college football national championship game's not bad either. The ticket prices if you wait until. I bought my tickets like 30 minutes before the game started, and I got in for like $90. That was in Arizona this year.
I went to the UT Alabama Rose Bowl in 2009. I think I paid like $300 at the stadium for face value tickets. So yeah, it wasn't too bad at all.
Do you know what the difference is now? Is that you can buy tickets on your phone, and so. I really, like, when I went to the college football national championship game, I should have waited even longer. If I just would have, because I bought them as I was driving to the stadium, if I just would have waited, like, 5 minutes into the game, bought my tickets on the phone, I would have gotten in for, like, $40. So I lost a little bit of money, but it's fine. That was the Clemson-Alabama game was awesome. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, you were at that one?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that was a great game.
Yeah, I was like, on the goal line in the Alabama fan section. Someone tried to run in for a touchdown and got stopped or they scored. I forget which one, but that happened right in front of me. It was cool. It was a really cool game to be at.
College football is the best for like live atmosphere. I got to go to the UT USC 105 and oh my God. So, that'll never be topped.
So you did. Were those both at the Rose Bowl?
Both the Rose Bowl, yeah.
I never did that. Did you like it there?
Oh my gosh, the Rose Bowl is amazing. It's absolutely gorgeous.
That's one I have to. I've driven by it, but I've never actually went to a game there. What other college football? I'm assuming you've done some of the Texas places, right?
Yeah, the Texas OU was pretty great, the Red River Shootout. I went to the Fiesta Bowl and played Ohio State, and I guess that's it. I just UT games.
So, oh, you came to the one in Arizona?
Yeah.
I was covering that game. I was on the field for the very end of that game. That was
a great Colt McCoy comeback right there, man. He was a freaking amazing college quarterback.
Yeah, I remember walking right by Matthew McConaughey after the game because he was on. He somehow got on the field. Who would ever guess such a thing? That was when they had Ohio State had Pryor playing like wide receiver for Todd. What the hell was that dude's name with a B? Right.
I don't remember, but I remember him seeing him live. Like, this guy is a freaking monster athlete. Like, he gets into the backfield. Like, how do you even tackle this guy? Right. He has 5'10" safeties. Like,
all right. Somehow we talked about football. What's your favorite first round game?
Favorite? I think in terms of the game, it's going to be Wichita, Arizona. That's going to be a monster game. In terms of prospects, probably Seton Hall, Gonzaga. I'm looking forward to it a lot.
Okay, so what prospect wise, what are you watching in Seton Hall Gonzaga?
Whitehead and Sabonis. I think you'll see Whitehead playing pick and roll, and I would imagine they'll put Sabonis on Seton Hall's big man, and that's an NBA pick and roll matchup right there. NBA center for sure, and Whitehead's probably an NBA combo guard at the very least, and that's two teams playing pretty well, I think. That should be a really good game.
So you like? I don't think I saw Whitehead in either of the lists I was looking at.
Yeah, he kind of just came up the last month and a half. He was a McDonald's All-American last year. Went to Seton Hall, rebuilding program. Took some lumps, but they've got it going the last month and a half. They won the Big East championship. And you know, he's Lance Stevenson's protege. So what's not to love?
I mean, I know it's not the same Big East as it used to be. I can't believe Seton Hall won the freaking Big East championship. I can't remember the last time they were a relevant basketball team.
Yeah, it's been a while. I mean, They've got like five NYC guys. It's fun to watch them. They play like NYC bully ball basketball, but they can shoot too. So they're a really fun team. I can see them kind of making a run in this tournament and kind of getting being a national thing for sure.
I got to check them out. They're the two teams I want to see. Seton Hall, I want to see. I want to see Gary Payton Jr. play.
He's
not.
He's a really fascinating bracket because he's got VCU in the first round. That's a pressing team. And if you're a senior point guard, man, you can make some money against a pressing team for sure.
I stole your tweet and embedded it into that the story I did for that bracket.
Yeah, and then he goes against Buddy Hield in round two. Yeah, there is bucks on the tail for Gary Payton for sure.
And do you think he can push himself into the first round?
Yeah.
It seems like there's like more older dudes in this draft than normal, or am I just imagining things?
No, I mean it's just this year's freshman class is not really. It didn't come in with much hype, and it's played to even less of that hype. So there's just more spots available than in most years.
All right. From the basketball perspective, you mentioned Arizona, Wichita State. I have a bunch of friends who are Arizona fans, and they think it's a horrible matchup for them.
Yeah, I mean the one thing they have is those 2 7-footers, Tarzewski and Ristich. If they can space the floor for those guys can post up more than Vandy's 7-footers, and Wichita's pretty small. So that's their best chance of success. But at the same time, Wichita's a great half-court team, and you want to press the ball against them. And so I'm not sure if that's Arizona's strength either. So it's going to be it's gonna be an interesting game.
What's your Final Four?
Right now, let's see. I'm thinking I'm going to go Michigan State in the Midwest. I'm going to go UNC in the East. I'm going to go Miami, Florida in the South. And I hate to do this, but I'm going to take A&M in the West.
Okay, so why – I think everyone knows UNC and Michigan State. Why do you like Miami and Texas A&M?
As I was saying, I think they're both pretty balanced teams. Miami's got a senior point guard. They both have senior point guards. They're both very experienced. And if you're not going to have like an elite NBA player, you want to have that kind of experience across the board. They're both pretty balanced. They're both good on offense, good on defense. Like, they both have NBA-caliber wings. They both have bigs with size you can store. So I think they're not the flashiest teams, but I think they're the most well-rounded teams in their bracket.
It's pretty hypocritical of me to ask people to make picks in this because I haven't filled out a bracket. This is going to be my fourth year I haven't filled one out.
Well, it's fun to fill it out. Might as well.
No, I've talked about this before. I stopped the year Michigan made it to the title game because I didn't trust them and I didn't want to pick them to lose. So I just stopped and I get too upset. Number one, I don't watch as much college basketball as I used to, and I get too obsessive about it. So for me, it was just easier. It's more enjoyable just to watch the games and take them in than worry about stupid shit I don't know anything about.
Fair enough.
I feel more informed right now. That was helpful. Anything else? Is there an overarching theme for you for this tournament?
I don't know. I mean, maybe when it's over, I'll think of something. I've been like just so busy watching players and getting up with all these teams. I don't know. Big picture wise, I'm still right now very small picture for all of these teams. I got on big picture things.
Let's see. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I want to get in here. Just kind of scrolling through this bracket. Kentucky, Indiana is the best. I can't believe that's a round two game, and that's one of the ones they have just matchups at like every level of the court.
Yeah, I would say Kentucky, Indiana, Maryland, Cal. Those are two just monster second-round games. For NBA fans, those are two to watch. Hope those teams get out of the first round because, yeah, in both games, it's NBA versus NBA at almost every position. Not players, at least prospects.
That in that South, that second round could be Kansas, UConn, and Maryland, Cal. That'd be a lot of fun.
Or Wichita, Miami. I mean, they're just good. That South bracket, as you were saying, is just freaking loaded.
Yeah, and it's the South and the East. They're nuts. Like, even Wisconsin, Xavier in the second round, West Virginia, Notre Dame. Like, these are big-name teams playing each other.
Oh, here's something I got for you. Watch out for Weber State, man. They got this guy, Joel Ballenboy. He might be an NBA player. That might be an interesting game. I'm watching it carefully.
I saw he was in like the 80s, I think, in at least one of Draft Express or CBS. That they had him in the 80s.
Yeah, because like he's playing a small conference and whatever. But he is you watch him play for like 5 minutes, he is an elite athlete. And he's been slowly building up the rest of his game. Interesting story, he was born in Ukraine. His dad's from the Congo. His mom's from Russia. He came to Dallas when he was really young. And then Weber State found him early, and he stuck with them, even though all the bigger schools came late. So he's kind of been obscure the last 4 years. Now, this is one shining moment. I had a thing coming out today on The Ringer in the newsletter. We're calling it the Kyle O'Quinn All-Stars. And these are the low-major guys who might get that one game. Because O'Quinn was at Norfolk State.
Oh, you're making me upset. I don't like the word Kyle O'Quinn an all-star in any context.
But I would say, like, he had 25-14 against Missouri. And without that game, I don't think he's in the NBA right now. So that game made him $20 million. So that's fun to me. I guess for me, that first weekend, that's what's really fun to me, is watching guys kind of – you know, make their lives. Like, these are the biggest games of these guys' lives. At no point in your life will one game be worth $20 million, which this game for Joel Ballenboy could be. So that's really fun to me.
Did Lillard, was he Weber State or Liber? Was he the Weber State?
He was Weber State, but he left the year before Ballenboy came. Though I apparently Lillard's still pretty close to the program, so.
That's cool. I like when guys are like that. All right, so Xavier's pretty good inside too, right?
They're decent, but their bigs aren't NBA caliber. So Ballenboy has a chance. It reminds me a little bit also of when Farid was at Morehead State and they beat Louisville in the first round. And it was like, you get this NBA big man just out-athleting these good college big men. That could happen. Or Xavier could win by a lot. I don't know. It's a Big West team or Big Sky team, so who knows. But I'm going to watch someone very carefully.
Are you going to pick Weber State?
I mean, in my bracket, I guess, because why not? Who cares? But I don't think they're going to win or anything, but just forget it, right?
Yeah, who gives a shit? It makes it more fun doing something
like
that.
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of because why not? Who cares?
Yeah. All right. Why don't you get out the ringer.com, go sign up for the newsletter. You'll see his Kyle O'Quinn. When's that coming out?
I think we're recording this on a Wednesday afternoon. I believe like right now. Comes out at lunch on lunch usually, so probably any minute now.
All right, so go sign up for theringer.com after you listen to this. Go check out John's stuff. Hey, John, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, man.
Oh, always. That wraps up another edition of the Podium Game Podcast.